Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast. I'm Andy, and I'm your host today because I have my friend Eric Spett in the studio with me. Eric is the CEO and co-founder of Terminus. Terminus was the fastest growing software company in the city of Atlanta in 2017 and was voted one of the top places to work in the country by Inc. magazine. Eric is 30 years old, and Eric, this is actually your second startup, and the first one didn't go so well. So this is a story. This is a comeback story. This is a story about a young guy who decided, you know what, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to let what happened the first time keep me down the next time. So for those of you who are in the not going so well phase of your business, or maybe you're wondering if it's time to pull the plug or do something different, or maybe somebody's telling you it's time to pull the plug and do something different, I cannot tell you how happy I am that you're going to hear Eric's story. But really, more importantly, he's going to talk about the aftermath and how he found the courage and the motivation to start again. But before we jump into that part of the story, Eric, tell us a little bit about Terminus and what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So listening to the last episode of the podcast, I think a good phrase to describe what we're doing is we're challenging the status quo. And we are challenging the status quo in the world of B2B businesses, so businesses that sell to other businesses. And what we're doing is something called account-based marketing. And so this is a category that we've created. It's more than just a category. It's a change in philosophy and overall business strategy that many B2B companies in the world are doing, by and large, as a result of some of the work that we've done. And so what is this all about? It means that B2B companies historically have been very focused on quantity and how many leads can we get, and then how many do we have to go through the sales cycle to become customers, only to find that these days, 99% of those leads never end up becoming customers. So you think about businesses are spending time, money, and energy on all of these people and accounts who are never going to do business with them, and even if they do, aren't going to stick around to become great customers
so
and advocates.
You have almost solved that problem single-handedly.
Yeah. No, we are... We're proud to say that we're at the forefront of this movement of account-based marketing. But what we're really trying to help and what we are helping our customers do is switch to a model that's much more focused on quality. So before doing any sales or marketing, how do you figure out who are the top accounts that you need to target? Who can marketing and sales agree that they want to do business with? And then spending all of your efforts on those accounts. And so what that leads to is a whole different way and style of engagement and measurement. And it, you know, we call it flipping the funnel. So if you think of the traditional sales funnel as wide at the top, narrow at the bottom, this is all about really focusing in the top and narrowing in on your top accounts. And then everything should get wider as you go because you're working with the right people and everything is more effective and efficient.
But Eric, account-based marketing is not where you began your business adventure. It was a much different context. So let's back up to college. Coming out of college, your first big idea, and let's start there because again, this lays the groundwork for what we're going to talk about and where we're going. So,
yeah, absolutely. So to rewind even further back, just a little bit about me. So I was born in New York, but I'm from Atlanta. So what I mean by that is grew up in New York till I was 8, parents divorced, moved down to Atlanta with my dad and 2 brothers, been here ever since, went to middle school, high school, here up the road to the University of Georgia. And during my junior year of college, I had an internship with a company that I won't name here in Atlanta. That was great. It was a great summer. I made a whole bunch of money and went to the pool quite a bit, but they didn't really care if I was working at all. And so while I had a lot of fun that summer, it was very unfulfilling. And so getting back to school, one of my roommates at the time who became my first business partner, Dave, we sat in a room the first week back in school in August during our senior year and literally said, let's start a business. So after searching for all sorts of work from home, get rich quick, multi-level marketing, sorts of things on Google, David had the best real business idea that we could think of. And that was that his father from Philadelphia was a seafood importer and still uses a fax machine. And so we thought, why don't we solve the problem of, you know, getting all of these seafood suppliers' prices and information out on the internet? So that became FishList, which was the easiest way to describe that was LinkedIn for the seafood industry. So seafood suppliers could go online, they could list, create a profile, list all of their products, and then the seafood buyers, who are restaurants and grocery stores, would have an easy way to go find new people to do business with.
You launched while you were still in college.
Oh, yeah. So we started working 100-hour weeks from that day.
While you were finishing school.
We didn't go to much class.
Yeah. You were a senior.
That year was great. We spent a pretty significant amount of time doing business planning. We actually stepped in at the last minute to the UGA business plan competition and won it. And there was a whole group of people.
With this idea that you were already kind of hip deep into.
Yep. So we were already running. Yep. We had some mock-ups from it. And we actually swooped into this thing that people had been taking a class all semester long. And we entered the competition. We did the pitch. It was actually on CNN. And at the end of it, the prize for it was a $50,000 investment. And we actually ended up turning it down outright without even learning about the terms or anything
because
like that. We were, in retrospect, it probably wasn't a great decision, but we wanted to own 100% of the whole thing, and we didn't want to give up any equity.
You didn't need any help.
As the story unfolds, maybe it wouldn't have been the worst thing to have some people putting some healthy pressure on us that knew how to build a business.
So you graduate from college, you've already got a business partner, you've already got a business. So what happened next?
So what happens next is we actually move myself, Dave, and Dave's dog, Roo. We move back to Dunwoody, Georgia, where my parents live. We move into my parents' basement.
Both of you.
So both of us and the dog. My dad.
This is a true startup.
True startup.
Yeah.
Now that there's really no school and no pressure of that, we're working even more hours. So call this 120, 130 hour weeks. Which,
and both of you are wired this way.
Both of us are wired this way. Wow. So we're definitely enabling each other. And we're working really, in retrospect, we're working in a vacuum. We're not out in the market. We're not surrounded by people who know how to build businesses. Neither one of us were really technologists. So things that we likely should have been getting more help on, we were just taking everything on and doing it ourselves. And so in that period, we just basically kept working and working and working and working.
And was there income associated, or was this down the road? Is this something you were hoping to sell? I mean, what's the end game? Because obviously this wasn't your passion. This was just an idea that you had as a senior in college.
Yeah, so I think that we were so young, we didn't even know what the outcomes would be. I think we both thought that we would be billionaires over the next few years.
Right.
And so, no, there was no revenue. There was no income. We actually did end up taking a small angel investment from a local investor here in Atlanta, but it was strictly to build the product and to keep the business going. So both Dave and I think he had emptied out his bar mitzvah money. I was swiping my credit card to live, and that lasted for years. So in typical entrepreneur startup fashion, was digging a pretty healthy hole of debt. I think at the end of the day, where before we start climbing back up again, I was 50 or 60 grand in debt.
And living at home with your parents.
And living at home in a pretty dysfunctional romantic relationship, a lot of debt, and as we'll, I'm sure, get to in a minute, super depressed, not eating well. I mean, kind of just digging myself into a hole.
And it's, at what point, I'm sure people warned you. I mean, there were people that are like, it's either a bad business idea, or the way you're going about it's wrong, or you're just going to kill yourself physically before you get to the end. What's kind of going on in your head at the time?
Yeah, so
what's driving you?
I think it's a little bit of all of that. At the end of the day, I think is maybe as we talk more about what's going on today, the what's driving me is becoming more clear. And it's kind of just, I think a lot of it is the way that I've been wired. But we got fixated on something, and we were arrogant 21, 22 year olds. And we just thought we knew exactly what we were doing. And as it turns out, we were not doing the right things and not focused on the right things and didn't have the support systems around us or the knowledge to build a healthy business.
Now, I want our audience to know that Eric is actually a very disciplined person. So you weren't sitting around in your parents' basement hoping, the whole thing was going to work out. You're one of the most disciplined people I know, one of the most structured people I know. And one of the reasons I enjoy spending time with you is it challenges me in that way. So if just knowing you the way I do, if anyone could have made this work in terms of just, we're just going to work so hard that, we're going to get there. I think it's you and certainly your partner. And yet for some reason, that just wasn't enough. And looking back, you think it was primarily you just weren't connected with people who could fill in the knowledge gaps and technology gaps, perhaps that neither of you had.
Yeah, I think it is and it was a little bit of everything. So we learned a lot of lessons. So I guess let me paint a more clear picture of what was actually going on. We had this fledgling business. We had a couple people paying us, but we're talking maybe revenue of hundreds or if maybe thousands of dollars a month. We're working 130 hours a week. I'm not a hardcore technologist, so we had hired a web developer, but I was also trying to do some of the coding myself. Dave got really focused in on the design. So I think we spent a week or 2 weeks on our business cards alone. We were just getting super fixated on all these things that I think we enjoyed doing, but weren't necessarily going to drive the business forward. And so that story just perpetuated over the next 2 years. So just working hundreds of hours a week in my parents' basement without much income and pretty much isolation. We weren't out there in the marketplace. We just kept building and building and building and building and thinking, if you build it, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Or somebody's going to buy it.
Or somebody's going to buy it. And as we both learned, that's just not the way that it works. And so what we were actually doing was mentally, physically, emotionally, and financially just kind of wrecking ourselves. And I guess it was appropriate because we were trying to do a startup and a business. And so all these things that we thought were badges of honors, like number of hours worked and et cetera,
et cetera. Well, you read the books and you hear the stories and, hey, isn't this how it happens? This is always part of those success stories. And eventually this begins to take a toll, not only on your relationships, but obviously on your health. So talk a little bit about that.
So yes, it was absolutely taking a toll. When I look back on those years and fishless lasted for about 3 years, one of those years in college and then two of those years post-college. In those post-college years in my parents' basement, mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, I was just wrecking myself. So by the end of it, I was, and didn't know it at the time and had never had experience with this, I was extremely depressed. I was in debt. I probably weighed about 140 pounds and I'm a healthy 160 or so today. My relationship with my girlfriend was really bad, was neglecting all the relationships with my friends and had essentially just dug myself into this big hole. And so one thing that is also interesting looking back is you could think about, I was living in my dad and stepmom, my parents' basement, and they were actually watching all of this happen. And as I've gotten perspective on it, what I've realized is, you know, and as we'll see coming out of the story, that I actually look back on those years as some of the fondest years. Like those were the years that propelled me to growth and propelled me to get my stuff together and get my act together. And by them basically treating me as an adult and letting me live my life and making my own decisions, even if it was taking me in the wrong direction, that has been, and that period was one of the most impactful periods of my life.
So they didn't step in and try to save you.
So it's interesting because I was living in Atlanta with my dad and my stepmom. My mom has always lived up in New York, which is where I was born and originally from. And so I was actually visiting my mom over, I think it was the summer of 2014. And within a couple of weeks of coming back down to Atlanta, she called me one day and was just like, "Eric, enough is enough. You cannot do Fish List anymore." And David actually moved back to Philadelphia. Things were like, it was a little crazy. So David moved back to Philadelphia. My mom called me. She says, "Enough is enough. You can't do Fish List anymore. You're going to call Dave and tell him you can't do it and you need to get a job. And I'm going to help you. We're going to take a whole week and get your resume together," which consisted of adding one blurb about Fish List. I had the whole resume from out of school. It was together. And then one per day, you're going to reach out to people and you're going to go find a job. And so I actually love, as I look at it now, I love kind of the different parenting styles and the different perspectives of, I feel so grateful. And I truly believe that the end of the Fish List period was the rock bottom of my life. Because of the learning and growth that has come from that. And then from my mom's side of her probably knowing the timing and it's like, okay, enough is enough.
How does she know? Well, you were a mess physically, the way you've described it.
I think that's kind of some mother's intuition. And I was also, you know, I think I went up and visited her and didn't move from the couch for a week and didn't want to say too much. So I'm sure that was also a pretty good indicator. But I look back and I feel super grateful for the contrasting styles of parenting and kind of, you know, that my dad and stepmom, like, they tried to support us in every way they could. They did support us in every way they can. They let us live in their basement. They let this thing go. They like let us make our decisions as adults. And then my mom up in New York was like, okay, it's time.
And so did you push back? I mean, she's sort of, you know, pouring water on your dream and you've put all these hours and 2 years into, really 3 years into this.
I needed it. I was ready. She enabled me to take the out that I don't know that I was. I think I was in such a bad place that I couldn't have any perspective, and I don't know that I ever would have made the decision myself.
So what happened next?
So what happened next is that I took mother's advice, my mom's advice. I called Dave, and he was super accepting and told him, hey, like, I'm in a really bad spot. I got to get a job. He was very supportive of that.
So, Eric, you're going to listen to your mom. You call your partner, Dave. You say, Dave, I'm out. He completely understands. So before we jump into this next part of the story, what do you say to those in our audience who really are kind of running at an unsustainable pace? They kind of know it. People are hinting at it. They're unhealthy. They're drinking too much. They're medicating too much. They just, you know, what would you say to them? Because it's hard to stop. And, you know, I don't want our audience to miss the fact that you've invested at this point a lot of time, a lot of life. And as soon as you, you know, as soon as you say it's over, essentially, you know, that's all been a waste of time. Sure, there's going to be some lessons, but when you're in the middle of it, you're not thinking about, oh, the lessons I've learned. You're thinking, no, if I stop now, then I've pretty much wasted 3 years of my life. So what do you say to the person who's right there right now?
I think that, and that's a great question. I think that, you know, for all the times that I've been in environments and have friends that have been in environments like that, it's a hard for you to get the awareness on yourself. When you're in it, it's impossible to see outside of it. So the first thing I would say, I guess as a joke from how this all came about for me, is like, listen to your mother. Listen to your mom. But by that, I really mean, listen to the people around you, that even if you're not connecting with what they're saying, that you know that they care about you and love you. They are always going to be the first ones to help you become more aware. And it's impossible to change this stuff until you have awareness around it. So just try and listen, you know, even if it's who actually cares about me and what are the things that they have told me to do.
They don't have anything to gain by you stopping. They're genuinely concerned.
Exactly. So I think that is a big thing that could be very helpful. The other thing I realized looking back on that period is I also attracted people in my life who were at a similar health level as me. And as I've described, that was not very healthy. And without realizing it, unconsciously, I kind of surrounded myself with people that were at a similar health level.
Well, you probably attracted them.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that was just another thing looking back. It was like I was almost enabling myself by the people that I was choosing to be around.
Wow.
And I've always found that that was a very powerful perspective that I've gotten of you attract people who are at a similar health level to you. And as you've talked about before in a variety of different places, that year of time or that year of space on your own to grow and then go get yourself into relationships of all types, I can't say that I followed that advice, but I could definitely see how it rings true. So the last thing I've realized when I look back on that, I mean, I was at my rock bottom. I was someone who graduated 2 years prior, magna cum laude from college with a business degree, and I could not write 4 bullet points on my resume about what I had been doing for the last 3 years. And so in the moment, everything was a disaster. Every day was a disaster once I knew that that's where I was, which was a challenge in itself to even get that awareness. But looking back, that time period, and more specifically the year or so that followed it, was the greatest opportunity for growth of my entire life. So for anyone who might be listening that feels like they might be in that spot or has a friend that's in that spot, I know you can't feel it when you're in there. But those periods of challenge or struggle and strife are honestly, that is when the growth occurs. That is when the learning occurs.
To reiterate what you just said, because it's so powerful. And again, to our podcast listeners who are in the middle of that and everybody who they trust is saying, hey, you need to let it go. You need to put it down. You need to walk away. What Eric's telling us is it is not a total loss. It may be a total business loss. It is not a total personal loss. You took a great deal away from this experience personally that has actually served you in the future, in your, you know, future opportunity. So it's not a total loss, but it sure feels like it in the moment, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So Eric, you walk away from Fish List, you take your mom's advice, but now you need a job. So you start reaching out to some of the folks who had, you know, offered you opportunities before. So let's pick up the story from there. What happened?
Yep. So got my resume together, which took some time. My mom challenged me one a day, reach out to one person or company a day. So Monday, I'd reached out to Price Waterhouse. Number two was to Deloitte. And the third day, Wednesday, was to a guy named David Cummings, who I'd actually met back in college right after we had won the UGA business plan competition. And David is a super successful entrepreneur in Atlanta, the owner of the Atlanta Tech Village. And he was 2 weeks removed from selling his second company, Pardot, to a business called Exact Target, which within a year turned around and sold to Salesforce for quite a bit of money. So I sent David an email. This was on a Wednesday. and said, "Hey, David, don't know if you remember me. We met a few years ago back when I was in college doing Fishlist. Just read about your sale of Pardot. Congratulations. For reasons X, Y, and Z, I've decided to move on to other things. And candidly, I would do anything to be involved with your next venture from the ground floor and would work as hard as I can to make it even more successful than the last one."
Now, the interesting thing about David is you had had a previous conversation with David where he had given you some pretty good advice. I think you should tell our audience about that, because I think that just
I've got to embarrass myself.
This underscores the irony of this, and I think this is helpful for folks who are kind of in that stubborn, headstrong season of their lives. So just go back a little bit and tell us about that.
All right. So I've just recently shared this with David, so it feels safe. But David at the time, so this is us in college, just getting the business plan together, pitching for some local angel investment. David is running a multi-million dollar software company with a penthouse office on East Basis Ferry in Buckhead of Atlanta. And we met with David and another angel investor and pitched them what we were doing. He gave us all this great advice about staying focused on revenue and customers and very focused on the seafood industry and not worrying about poultry and grains and everything else that was part of our vision, and all great advice that we should have taken. And instead, we walked out of that meeting and I said to my business partner, Dave, that, hey, that guy, David, he's an idiot. By the time we're his age, we're going to be billionaires. And so here I am.
And so here you are 3 years later. Hey, David, you know, how about a job?
How about a job?
Yeah. So, so again, he agreed to meet with you, though.
So he agreed to meet with me. So he, and I still have all the emails. He emailed me back no more than 20 seconds later and said, "Great to hear from you, Eric. Can you meet me tomorrow at the Disco Kroger Starbucks at 2:30 p.m. for 60 minutes? So I met him the next day. He asked me a bunch of questions about the Fishlist experience, and he said, "Great, well, I'm starting this new company. Here's what we're doing. I'd like you to be the first employee, start Monday, and I'd like to hire you as a software engineer."
Which you have already told us you had no experience or background in.
I had very little experience. Yeah. I had dabbled a little bit, but by no means was a software engineer. And I told him that, and he said, "Well, you're smart, so you'll learn. And just, I'll send you an offer later. You can negotiate a little bit, but just, can you start on Monday?"
So David gives you this incredible opportunity. You say yes, you go to work for David, but you're still in recovery mode, both financially, personally, physically. So talk a little bit about that. You didn't go in on hitting on all cylinders.
No, absolutely. And I'm not sure that David even knows where I was at personally at that time. But in fact, things were actually just starting to get worse.
Well, they were catching up with you.
Everything was catching up. So as everyone who's dealt with issues and struggles before knows, awareness is the first step to fixing something. And so I had just become aware, and thanks to some great people in my life, I'd taken some action and gotten this wonderful opportunity from David. But on the personal front, everything was just starting to hit me. So the realization that I was depressed, and what did that mean? And going to a psychologist for the first time in my life. And I moved out of my parents' basement into an apartment by myself, which was a huge challenge. And, you know, I just started digging out of debt and was still dealing with many of the personal issues that got me kind of into that mess in the first place. So, in fact, the struggle was really actually just starting to kick in for me to deal with.
So, what did you do?
So, I think one thing that was helpful was I had a job. And it was a very cool job. And it was one that started to get my brain firing again. And I was engaged in something and I was part of something. So naturally, that helped a whole bunch. As I said a few moments ago, I started going to a psychologist.
Did somebody recommend that, or was that your idea?
I think someone recommended it to me.
Was that difficult to agree to? Because for most men, it is. We don't want to ask for help.
I think I was such a mess that I didn't care about anything. I was in such a bad spot that it was like, whatever. Whatever people are going to give me as advice and suggestions, let me just take it, because what I'm doing is not working. And so, 2 or 3 days a week at a psychologist, I started taking antidepressants. I think I started attacking it from all angles. And one of the last things that I think really helped get me over the edge, and this goes back to people who love and care about you and have no vested interest in your businesses, my friends definitely knew where I was at. And they actually kind of plucked me, four of my best friends from college kind of plucked me out of living in an apartment by myself, and we all moved into a house together. And so now I've got, you know, gainful employment, I'm working on some of the interpersonal stuff. I'm stopping some habits. I'm back living with my friends in a normal post-college environment. And pretty quickly, as you start to take action, things start to change. So I would say that 6 or 7 months into this new career, my life started to feel somewhat normal together. But it really took at least a year for things to really feel back to normal. I remember just after New Year's of 2014, where I was like, I had a moment, like a very vivid moment. I don't think I've experienced anything like this since, where I just was actually walking into the parking deck at work and I stopped dead in my tracks. And like, I think there was like tears in my eyes. And I was like, I'm myself again. And it was at least a year from like really the awareness. And of course, you know, a year sounds like a really long time, but a year in the grand scheme of your life actually is very quick.
So on the personal side, you're making progress. Tell us about what's going on the business side.
So on the business side, it's actually, I feel so confident that I landed in the absolute best opportunity in the world for me. David had just done really well with his business. For those of you who are in Atlanta and know about the Atlanta Tech Village, it's this 100,000 square foot building that he bought and renovated. David's kind of becoming in many ways the center of the tech ecosystem in Atlanta, and I'm having a front row seat to everything that's going on in that world. Not only that, but I've learned to code. At this point, I'm actually managing a team of 10 to 12 engineers, which was an interesting experience in itself. There was nothing but exciting things going on the business front, which of course also helped on the personal side. But for about a year and a half, I think I went from the title of software engineer to development manager, to operations manager. So I was getting to work on a lot of cool stuff. I was getting to learn a lot of cool stuff. And in, I believe, one of the most fascinating environments that someone who has an interest in technology and software could possibly be in the entire world.
So things are going better personally. Things are going great professionally. And this was such a great opportunity. You saw yourself working with David for, you know, for the foreseeable future. And then he kind of throws you a curveball, a good curveball.
So yeah, so I was feeling good. Life was feeling probably as it should for a mid-20s, 24, 25-year-old, and was really prepared to be with this company with David and see it through. And during a lunch conversation with him, completely out of the blue, he put the bug in my ear about, you know, in 6 to 24 months, he thinks that I'll probably go start another company. And at the time, that was about the scariest thing he could have said to me. I just ruined my life for 3 or 4 years. I just dug out of this hole. The last thing I'm going to do is put myself back in that situation.
Yeah, not if your mother has anything to do with it. Yeah.
Absolutely. I know people that David has invested in and started companies with before. So I start talking to them about like, how does this work? What's the deal? And it just, the feeling kept going stronger and stronger and stronger. And so one day, it was in March of 2014, we were the last two people in the office, and I turned to him and said, hey, David, I haven't stop thinking about what you said about starting another company. And he jumped up and he was excited and, you know, said, can we go to lunch this week? And we went to lunch and he said, here's the deal. I'll write you a check for $300,000 to go start a company. Here are the terms. You can give your 1 week notice and get started.
Now, did you have an idea? Did he have an idea? Or was this, hey, here's some money, go find an idea?
There was no idea. And so as part of that process, it was, let's figure something out. And we were looking at ideas it was all business, but, you know, business to consumer ideas, business to business ideas. There was nothing. It was, here's a check, go figure it out.
So Eric, David says, hey, I believe in you. Here's a check. Go find something to invest it in. Tell us, you know, what happens next?
So what happens next is a roller coaster of a new startup. And so pretty immediately, I found two amazing co-founders, another guy named Eric Vass, who is a technologist, as well as a guy named Sangram, who is a brilliant marketer and evangelist. We started figuring out what we were going to build. That took about a year. In our first year of selling, we went from $0 to $1 million in annual recurring revenue. We raised our first round of venture capital. It was about $5 million. In that next year, we grew from $1 million in annual recurring revenue to more than $5 million. We raised our second round of venture capital, which was a little more than $10 million. Last year, the business more than tripled. We acquired our first business in San Francisco. We continue to be Atlanta and one of the country's top places to work. We have an amazing culture. It's full of positivity. It's full of energy. We really focus on the personal and professional growth of our team. Our plan for this year is to more than double the business again.
Wow.
We have built this category. The world of B2B is changing there. We have hundreds of customers. There are thousands and thousands of businesses adopting the philosophies that we've helped created and evangelize. And it still feels like it's just the beginning. So on the Terminus front, there are so many exciting things going on. And when we really boil it down to what we're doing, it's not about building great B2B software. By building the type of company that we're building, we're improving the lives of hundreds of people here in Atlanta and San Francisco. We're helping our customers. We're improving our customers' lives by helping them do their jobs better. We're helping their businesses grow more efficiently, which in turn is helping all of the people and organizations that they serve. And at the end of the day, what I believe we're truly doing is just working hard to improve the lives of people.
So as I listen to all that, of course, the business success is amazing, but the thing I keep thinking about is what hung in the balance of his decision to believe in you, for David's decision to believe in you and trust in you and say, here's a check, go find something to do with it. And I think you're going to have an opportunity to do that for some other entrepreneurs as well.
Well, I certainly appreciate you saying that, Andy, and I definitely hope that that is the case. I today feel like it might be a little bit of cart before the horse. I personally believe I've got a long way to go, and our business is definitely still growing and becoming successful. But it's things like this podcast, it's tools like this, it's the leadership lessons that don't really come naturally to a lot of people, myself included, that I believe will help give me the strength and the knowledge that I need to do that. And you know, what I also came to mind as you were saying that is, you know, 500,000 or more podcast listeners to this thing every month. I got to imagine there's some people out there that might be able to take a few minutes and identify a person or two that they know or know of, where they might be able to say, hey, you know what? I want to be the person that really helps them and helps pull them out or helps propel them forward. And out of, you know, love being on this podcast, of course, love telling my own story. But I think the thing that is most impactful is, how can we empower this community and this audience to go and just help a whole bunch of people?
Well, I think you've done that today. You've encouraged some folks to try again who didn't want to try again. And you've encouraged some folks to quit who need to quit because they're destroying themselves. So thanks so much for being on the podcast. And it's going to be fun to see what happens in the next season of your life, both personally and in your business. And thanks to you, our podcast listeners. Make sure you check out andystanley.com/podcast for the application guide that goes with today's content. And as always, thanks for subscribing and thanks for listening.